This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Authentic Persuasion Show. This is part two of my conversation with Mike Testa from Max Approvals, previously the president and running the show for quite some time with his team at Care Credit, which was then sold to GE. And an amazing story, amazing process that he went through, everything he learned. Make sure to check part one, tune into that to find out a little bit more. And obviously, you can read more and find out more of his story. But Mike, welcome to part two.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. So, yeah.
So this is officially the after show. Officially have way more stuff than I know that we can talk about in 15 minutes or so that I allot for this. I really need to expand it, because anyone that knows me knows that I just start chatting and get excited and, we go all over the place. One of the things that you mentioned kind of before we jumped on here, and one question I ask everybody, because I'm always curious, is what would you do differently, or what have you learned such that if you had to start it over, what would you do with your sales operation? And I think what's fascinating is you have, right? Like, you're doing new ventures. You're not just still at Care Credit. You've done other things. Like, what are some of those biggest lessons and or what you found is valuable starting over with a new sales operation or team?
Yeah, I think, what's important is focus on the things that are going to make a difference. When you're a startup, they say nothing happens till somebody sells something, right? So if you need to be focused on, I think, two things, like I said before, continually improving the product so that you become more competitive. I am a fiend about competitive intelligence. I do tons of research on what everybody else is doing, that I'm competing with in the field, what their rates are, what their product is like, how their tech is, and continually improving that product, but being out there and focused on sales. Right now, I'm doing a consulting with dental finance, a startup that is in patient financing. They're a waterfall lender. They have multiple lenders, one application, multiple lenders, which I think is a great idea and the next step forward, in this industry, because even at Care Credit, Care Credit is a prime lender. They're approving folks like 650 credit scores and above, but the approval rate is typically only about 50%. So half the time, you're having to deny the patient access to treatment because they can't get approved. So, other lenders have come into the market. They're near prime and subprime, but then you've got multiple applications and you have to say to the patient, oh, you were denied. You want to fill out another application, see if we can get you approved on this one. It's just a horrendous patient experience. So I really like the tech that they put together with this waterfall, and I'm helping them out with direction for the product, but mostly, whatever I'm helping them is sales and marketing. How do you go to market, right?
Well, which is funny and interesting, because in the previous episode, and you told me this even before when we talked, you're not a salesperson, right? That's not how you view yourself.
I am not.
Leader and implementer of sales and marketing. Do you think, kind of like I did forever, do you think you just don't put yourself in the bucket of salesperson because of what you think salespeople do? Why do you think you're not a salesperson? Because obviously you're great at it, and obviously if you can help, although you can help build sales operations without being great at sales, because you can be an architect without being a practitioner.
Sure.
But where is that true for you, right? Like, are you just saying you're not a salesperson?
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And I do listen to your podcast, and you're right. Maybe it's this feeling that old-time salespeople are arm twisters, right? And gee, that's not my personality, right? So maybe I'm not a salesperson, and that classic representation of what you think a salesperson is. But I am out there pitching. I was in Dallas last week pitching to five or six big prospects going through a deck. I don't think myself above it.
Well, and so two things, which then leads into the next question I wanted to talk about. But it's interesting because I know for myself, I didn't think I was in sales because of how I was raised by my parents, especially my banker mom, and how she viewed salespeople as sales, like you said, the old school classic arm twisting, manipulating salesperson. So I thought, oh, that's what sales is. So I'm not that person or doing that. So I must not be in sales. Even if I'm literally in a sales role, I still don't think of it as sales because it's either that or everybody else. When in fact, sales is sales and persuasion. There's just the manipulation side. And then there's, other ways to do it. So it's fascinating when I talk to people about that too, where it's like, no, I'm not in sales. It's like,
yeah, but you still have to have
gross.
You still have to be able to take all the no's.
Yes.
I'm not used to having people say no to me.
Well, maybe that's
because I'm the boss. So, people say no to me, right?
Nobody says no to me. Well, and what's interesting is like really good salespeople as sales professionals, not the arm twisting kind, but really good sales professionals are so used to not hearing no because they know who they can help and they know when they get that person in front of them that it should be a no-brainer. That literally the no's either don't affect them or they fire them up. It's like, no, you don't say no to this. Like, you need this. Like, this is important for you, right? Like, they're on a mission and they can help the right people.
Right.
Obviously, if you're the president of a giant company, people don't say no to you. Right. In a sales role, like, you can help them. It's a different no. It's probably a yeah, but, and then you just, deal with it. But you have so much experience.
You're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. So if you've done your homework as a salesperson, right, you've done the research, you know they have an issue, and you have a solution to that issue, then it's, you shouldn't expect to know, right? And you should be persistent. And sometimes that's what it takes, being persistent, right? Because you can help them.
Yeah, and anything that's a no is actually just more of an obstacle or a challenge or an issue to overcome, and it's really a trust issue or a physical obstacle. Like, no, I can't because I don't have money or I need approval or whatever that might be. And then that's just an obstacle to overcome, right? It's not an actual like hard stop. Anything else is just a trust issue. But again, if you do your homework, if you have a sales process, if you have the credibility and you can help them, that you shouldn't have trust issues.
And again, all the things that we talked about, right? Being able to understand their business, doing your homework, doing your research, seeing where you could help, seeing where you could your product is going to fit.
And this is big key. I didn't mention this in part one. You said it a few times, but I think this is so important: is the talking the talk. Right? When you use different language, and not just like slang language or something like that, but like industry terms with somebody, if you're speaking a different industry language than somebody else, there's a barrier and you're a foreigner in their world. And
yes,
then the trust is hard to build. If you're speaking the same language, just like anyone else, we're speaking the same language here, so there's a level of trust in communication. But I see that all the time where somebody's selling something. I'm selling a CRM, and I'm going to sell this to everybody. And then I'm talking CRM language, right? Like, I don't really care what your language is. I'm talking my language. And then it's like me versus you instead of me and you, like us language, we language.
Right. Yeah. Again, I'll go back to, everybody that I hired came from the market. We didn't see ourselves as a finance company. We saw ourselves as helping patients get treatment, which is what doctors are concerned about. They don't care about getting a loan or offering a loan to the patients. They care about getting them to accept the ideal treatment that they recommend. Because all these dentists had, they call it the two F's in dentistry. What prevents people from going ahead with the treatment? Fear and finance, right? Fear of the treatment, which the dentist can overcome. And then the finance is what we were there to help overcome, to help them get treatment. And it extended to other industries. When we got into, when I was running Lenny USA as president of sales and marketing there, we got into the funeral business, right? Financing funerals that are pretty expensive, $7,000, $8,000 for First thing I did was get the endorsement of the National Funeral Director Association, right? And then to give us credibility in the market. But I hired existing funeral administrators as our sales reps to sell to funeral homes. Not only to sell to the funeral director, but also to onboard and train the staff because they could relate. These people didn't know anything about finance. I mean, I can teach them the product. I can't teach them the market.
Yeah, and what's interesting is what you said too about the doctor part where they just care about, or the dentist part where they're treating patients, right? That's what they care about. So many people in sales are trying to sell their solution, which nobody cares about. They just want their results, right? They, right. You know, it's like the nobody wants to see how the sausage is made. They just want it, right? And so in dentists, doctors, funeral homes, they want that happy customer in their world that they can help and do what they're meant to do on their behalf. And this is a tool. A lot of salespeople fall in love with explaining the tool, but forget that the humans, we only care about the outcome, right? What's the result? What's in it for me? Like, what am I going to get out of this? Not how am I going to get this? Like, what do I get out of this?
But I've seen it so many times. You get too wrapped up on what it is and how it works, and not talk about which solution you're offering. What is the benefit? You know, for us, it was treatment acceptance. Every dentist in the world knows what that means, right?
That's it. That's their metric. So one last thing that I want to talk about, and I alluded to this, is face-to-face sales. And you even mentioned it a few minutes ago, where in this day and age, late 2022, as we're recording this, is still going out there and going face-to-face and meeting with people that you're doing some kind of prospecting, sales, enrollment, presentation, conversation, relationship building. Where does that fit in? Where's that balance with business and remote and online, and when that's valuable and when you can do things, you know, long distance? I guess for me, I was surprised when you told me that before we hit record that, you know, still doing that and still being a valuable part. Like, I almost picture that being done and over with, or people just being lazy now, right?
Yeah, my personal opinion is if it's important enough for me to get involved. And I don't get involved in all of them, right? You know, it has to be a significant enough opportunity or a relationship or whatever. Man, get on a plane and go there, right? Meet the people, shake the hands. I mean, I'm dealing with CEOs and CFOs and CTOs and, you know, six or seven people in a presentation, and it's just, it just doesn't feel like it's the same thing doing it on Zoom. You don't make the connection. I know Zoom's efficient and maybe great for mass sales, maybe. But if it's important, get on a plane, make a visit, show that you care, and go there.
Yeah. I think that's interesting in that balance. And we were talking about trade shows in part one and, you know, where that face-to-face, especially relationship building, especially in the beginning, to build that trust and then to have that relationship, you know, to move things forward, to have an understanding. I think that's one of the things. I have somebody who I work with in the marketing space, and he's like, I care about the relationships because it's not a matter of if something goes wrong. It's a matter of when something goes wrong or when an issue pops up. And if we have a relationship and you know that I have your best interest in mind and you have mine, then we'll work through it, right? If you don't know me or you don't trust me, then, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But business is all full of issues or challenges or questions, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's certain situations, you know, there's in my mind, a real difference or a inflection point between sales and marketing, right? You know, we were 150,000 dental practices in the U.S. That's marketing. Okay. I can't call on every one of them. I can't afford a sales team to be knocking on doors and trying to get an appointment with the dentist. I go broke in a heartbeat, right? So you got to get them to call you. And that's where marketing comes in, right? And the branding and so on. But within that stratosphere, you know, you still had 10% of the market that are these 200 locations, dental service, they call them DSOs, dental service organizations that have 200 practices, 300 practices, 1,000 practices. You're not going to get to them with marketing, right? You know, it's sales. And I know like Tony and Doug, Tony would send out Zaga guides to big prospects and say, I'm going to be in your area on this week, pick a restaurant out of this Zaga guide and we're going to go. We used to send Nespresso machines to the big guys, you know, it cost us a couple $100, but break through the clutter and get an appointment, right? And even in the marketing side, you know, this break through the clutter idea, we would do oversized postcards, not the 10 by oh, big oversized postcards.
No, no.
Same thing
I
with
call
the
them placemats.
20 by 20 booth, yep. The break through the clutter. Get them to call you because, God, you know, it's terrible if all you expect your salespeople to do is make cold calls. And then, you know, they're getting on the phone and they don't even know who you are. I mean, that's, you know, that's a tough job.
Yeah, that is fascinating the way you're talking about it with sales versus marketing. Like, what's a marketing activity versus where would sales get involved? And I'm thinking about other companies in other industries like B2B, software as a service, where they're trying to solve a marketing problem with salespeople, and then they're trying to solve a sales problem with marketing, right? Where it's like you're going after the big fish with marketing, which isn't going to work on its own, and then you're trying to go after the world with salespeople, which isn't going to work.
Right.
And that blend. So I love it. That's an amazing mic drop last moment part for you to talk about, because I know there's a lot of companies out there that will resonate with them, where they're trying this business development, cold calling, marketing strategy, and it's not working and it's not clicking because they're shooting at the wrong targets. The wrong team is shooting at it. So I love that. Such a great conversation. I knew we were going to run out of time. I just knew it. I know me. And then I've learned that you've got so much value and so much stuff on there. We'll definitely have to do this again. I know there's people who
can make
find
one
out
last
more
comment.
Links. Yeah.
One last comment. I would be remiss in not saying, you know, acknowledging Ralph Stern, who was the founder of Care Credit. I mean, the guy is brilliant, supportive, and not, you know, early in my career at Care Credit, without having him, it's important to have the right leaders, isn't it? That support what you do and how you believe it. And the guy was just a gem, and I was lucky to have to work for him, and lucky to hire the people that I hired in building Care Credit.
Well, and I'm glad that you said that, and I think that's always a testament. You can see that kind of in the lineage of leaders and the outcome of a company, of where it starts, because it always is at the top, right? Like either it's leadership at the top filtering down, or the fish stinks from the head down, right?
Yeah.
It could go either way. And, you know, if obviously things are going well and it's a strong culture and professionals that are really making a difference out there in the market and the world and with their teams, then it the responsibility and the credit does keep going uphill to, you know, the person who's ultimately leading that. So that's awesome. For
and keep what doing what you're
now,
doing. Keep doing what you're doing, because it's important.
I took lots of notes. I'm thinking about like the stuff I want to do, some of the things to do more of this, solving my marketing problems with marketing instead of sales, and sales with instead of marketing. So lots of value. This is going to be in the show notes. There's going to be lots of great stuff for people who want to follow up with you. Maxapprovals.com is your website. Also, obviously, LinkedIn. They can find you other places. Again, Mike, I appreciate you being here and sharing so much. You know, even on the podcast, that's very general, and you focus on one space, which is, you know, patient finance. To share this in this general audience, I appreciate that and your time here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And that's it. Like I said, I knew we were going to run out of time. For everyone watching, listening, make sure to check out part one. So much gold in there from Mike and what he shared. If you're listening to the podcast, subscribe. Make sure to check that out. If you're watching on YouTube, find that part one. And as always, until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.